Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. And it is now or never. And that debt is fraud. And we need to be appealing to heaven. Please, in if you're so inclined to appeal to, you know, a greater being, a creator, Christ, what have you, whomever you plead to, we need you to speak up that we will be blessed with the divine providence and his inspiration in hand in helping us reclaim this republic and what we're doing. And so if you want to do that as a group or just by yourself, that's great. Thank you for doing that. If you're interested in creating a group and you want me to put your information on that page, and I said this enough. Welcome back, Tammy. Have I not said this enough? Do I need to really, have I labored the point on this?
I think so.
So if you want to give me your organizational prayer information, I'll put it up on Red State Talk Radio podcast page on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. Okay, so the last thing I'm going to talk about is that your campaign needs to begin today. I got to be very brief on this. You need to be getting into the grill of every public servant. They are our warriors. They are the ones that have to start taking a stand and demanding compliance of the Constitution. They take an oath for a reason, to support that Constitution. And the fact that they're taking a check and actually watching this whole country go down the toilet, the blood is on their hands, but it's equally on ours because we're not getting in their grill. The right of accountability starts with we the people, and then it goes up the food chain. Or actually, let's call it down the food chain, because when you look at the mass and the power that we have at the county level, we have a lot more county legislators than there are state legislators. We have a lot more county legislators than there are in Congress. That means that that's where the force is, and that's why it goes down the food chain to that next child, because our county is the child government. The state is our grandchild, and so we need, as the parents of the child, the county, keep it up with me. I mean, keep up with me, folks, here. So we go down to our child, the county, and we tell them, hey, look, all of these things are travesties. These are violations. You've got to do something about it because you're supposed to be supporting the Constitution like we are. We're telling you this is what you need to do. Go do it. And when you look at those, as a matter of fact, you know what? I should have done this, and because I have a paragraph, and I sent it to Bob, and I'm not sure if you saw that. Did you? I'm sure you probably did. It was a breakdown of what those expectations are, and not being prepared because I dynamically think, but you know, I talk by the seat of my pants, and this is one of the reasons why I get feedback, because it's I end up bringing in a lot of content, a lot of information, instead of trying to be very singular in, you know, the flow of information. You need to know this. And so because I'm all over the place all the time, people always have, I guess, this problem of keeping up. Is that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So.
Yeah, sure.
It's my fault. I mean, hate GR, right? But that's what we need to do. And as I'm looking, why don't you tell me, so did you get a chance to go through the document yet?
Yeah, so as we were speaking earlier, I was saying how maybe we just need to explain suffrage, because I don't even know if a lot of people understand what that even is. So when you're talking about the truth about the 17th Amendment, what is suffrage mean when it comes to the state legislators and that level?
Yeah. So, now I know we're all busy, And I know not everybody can read GR's articles, but I do try to put it all out there. And I apologize that it may seem like so much. And I can't do it. You know, if I'm going to do it concisely, in other words, you know, have you ever heard the 30-second pitch or 90-second pitch? So the 90-second pitch goes back to, if you want to get a CEO's attention, you have to give them a 90-second pitch. And that pitch has to be good enough to hook them to say, I'm very interested in what you're talking about. I think this is something that we can, as a business, we can mutually benefit. And so a 90-second pitch, there is no such thing as a 90-second pitch to what needs to happen to save the Constitution. There's no 90-second pitch to speak to the problems of the county and our government, the problems that have basically been baked in over the years, and what has to happen to do that. You can basically do a 90-second pitch to go, you know, we don't have these things. But there's still just so much to cover. And so when it comes to a business idea, sometimes it's very easy to come up with a 90-second pitch. But because this governing and liberty and these ideals and ideologies are not easy to actually, you know, provide a 90-second pitch. It's not like, you know, maybe a 90-second pitch on the gospel of Jesus Christ. You could probably do something like that to get somebody intrigued. And maybe there's a 90-second pitch regarding suffrage. Or maybe there's a 90-second pitch regarding the state's suffrage in the Senate. But that would be based upon having the requisite knowledge, like you said, and understanding suffrage, representation, or republicanism. Mm-hmm. And so I'm trying to write the documents to help everybody get this foundation. So I actually break down, when it comes to a word that's really important, like republicanism, I break that down to the nth detail. With suffrage, I break that down. And so if you read Why Counties Matter Most, or if you read my previous articles, What is the Real Problem, Martial Law in the 21st Century, and The Unseen Teeth in the Constitution, these articles are really helping explain to a good detail what I think you need to know. And so, folks, I would just ask, please read and review. Send me back comments. Send me an email to say, hey, I've read, you know, What is the Real Problem? And actually, my preference would be read all of them before you come back and say what I'm missing, because you may be surprised to find that the first one and the second one may not have, you know, completely quenched, because the whole point is to talk about the problem. The whole point is to kind of help understand these problems that we're dealing with. I haven't even gotten to the solution yet. That's coming up in the next article, of how to do this at the county level tactically and what you need to do to convert your existing illegitimate governance back to your legitimate governance. Because as I point out in Why Counties Matter Most, we've never created that constitution. So how do you do that? And what do? We need people to start understanding this, because we're going to be thrown into a position where we really need to understand these fundamental principles of checks and balances and limited government. We want to make sure that we don't have a few people taken over to say, we want, you know, communism, you know, whatever you make, we take, and we give you what you need. We don't want that here. That's not what we're supposed to have, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I happened to, while you were talking, sneakily go over and get the breakdown of these expectations for county commissioners. Because like we were going back to what we were saying, we are supposed to hold our county, all public servants accountable. If they've taken an oath, they are required to support the Constitution. So we should be able to prove that the Constitution is not being supported. You need to do something about it. even though it may not be in your will, well, you're still under legal obligation to support it. And you need to take a stand. And we make it very simple for the county commissioners. It's not like we're asking them to gird up their loins in all of the armaments and warfare weapons and go slay dragons. That's not what they need to do. They need to support the Constitution. And one of the best things that we all have to do is we have to first cry out, that is illegitimate. That is not constitutional. Where are the powers in the Constitution delegated giving you that authority? When you place context to the problem, as simple as that, I mean, that right there is the 30-second pitch. Where in the Constitution did we delegate that power to you to do these things? Boom.
Yeah.
Okay. So when we do that, then we ask them, okay, so if you can't prove that this invasion is, you know, not a violation, if you can't disprove our assertion, because we break down the constitutional arguments in each of these documents. And so if they can't prove anything other than, yes, you're right, this is an invasion and we must repel it, then what do you want us to do? And this is what those 8 sections do. These are the expectations for a county legislator who is legally bound to support the Constitution. First, they are to form a constitutional compliance committee. And that committee is going to go and do certain things, and that committee is going to do all the work for them. They're going to define and go through research and delineate what is the legitimate Constitution. What is in the Constitution that they can do, and what are the things that they can't do? And then we're going to look at this federal Constitution, then the state Constitution. Then we're going to look at any other government below the state, if there is any, their constitutions. Because if there's a government below the state, there needs to be a constitution, right? Because when we form governments, we delegate power. So if a government exists without a constitution, in America, it is not a legitimate government. And guess how what most cities and most municipalities and other governing bodies, you know how they do them today? They use charters. In Montana, Wyoming, I'm sure that they use a charter to create a township. They use a charter. What is a charter?
Oh, okay.
Do you know what a charter is? See, most people don't know this, but if you actually, I think if you read Why Counties Matter Most, and if it's not in there, folks, let me know. Hey, you missed the charter, because I think I mentioned this. A charter is established by a sovereign, a governing sovereign, which is why the British Crown created charters to create Georgia, the Carolinas, Virginia, and all of these colonies, because they were there and existed for him. This is why when every time, you know, a bunch of pilgrims, not the pilgrims, but people traveled to America, when they arrived, they claimed the land for the good Lord in heaven and the King of Britain. That land was now in the service of Britain in serving the good Lord in heaven. Right?
You do have charters in there, by the way.
I do have charters in Why the Counties Matter Most. Okay, good. Mm-hmm. So I'm trying to clarify that, you know, that is it's an educational document that kind of goes through these basics, but we have charters today, which means that this governing body has created this. The Declaration of Independence is clear. Governments are instituted by we the people. It says by men, but back in those days, women weren't involved. And I think that we do need to be more, I don't want to say I'm inclusive. Right? That's you know, the connotations and using proper words, sometimes you can get hanged because it's because of political correctness or anti-political correctness, you know what I'm saying? And the reality is we the people need to establish those governments. If we're going to create a city, we the people in that area, that vicinage, need to create that city. If we're going to create a county, we want to have our own county. We need to create that county. And as I told the folks last week, you don't create a government unless it can self-sustain it. In other words, what is it this government's going to do? Well, it's going to run your elections. It's going to basically keep law and order. It's going to protect us from invaders, suppress insurrections, and execute the laws of the union. So that's what the, because every person in the county has that responsibility of execute, because we are the militia. So we have these responsibilities to support this government as a part of the militia. Okay, so now we know the fundamental things that we will have to support. What is it that we want them to do? Because if you ask them to provide you with good water, to create a water plant and water distribution, if you want them to create the roads and so forth, you know, then you need to delegate them that power to do that. Now, if you want to have state highways, then you would have that government delegate to the state the ability to make sure that there are adequate highways to interconnect these counties, that each county has a highway interconnecting all of them. There you go. That way, the state is supporting infrastructure that equally serves the state, equally. Because if you're creating a general government, you want that general government to make sure that all counties, I mean, you don't create really good roads for the counties you like, and, you know, it's dirt, gravel roads or trails, you know, horse trails for the other counties. No, no, that's going to be a good, equal, quality highway that interconnects everyone. And when you look at some of the states, because those states are so rural, they say, well, we don't see any reason of developing that. Well, here's the problem. You don't develop, then they can't develop it. In other words, if you don't develop adequate infrastructure, it takes longer to develop that area. Does that make sense? So that means if you're going to if you're going to start mining out of these mountainous areas that may not seem like there's anything there, but hey, there is things there. So provide an adequate highway system, not the infrastructure and infrastructure. So the structure within the county would be the county's responsibility. Maybe they would be dirt roads. And as the things develop within the county, they start making money off of the mines and off of the lumber and the resources within that county, then the county will actually, you know, start creating these, you know, interfaces to this state highway. But these plans need to be done so that they're equally serving. And so technically, when you look at the money that is spent on state highways in one county like Cheyenne compared to your county, you go, hold on here. That's not equal distribution. You need to make sure that we're all getting the same opportunities, because if you were having those same highways or you were getting that same network, then you'd be more apt to develop your counties as well. So anyway, the point is that we're going through the counties and these expectations, and I digressed. I dove down a rat hole and see, I got to pull myself back out. So the first thing is that the county commissioners or legislators form this committee. They go through the constitutions. They are going to break down these constitutions so that you now have a very good definitive understanding of, one, the constitutions and how they were originally defined. And so the second thing, well, that's good. And there's other things that are going to be happening in that committee. So that, but that, once the commissioners or legislators create that committee, they're done. They go home, they sleep. They don't even think about it. They get reports from that committee from time to time. And the committee will interface. They're having these problems. They need this. They need that. But they're to feed and support this committee with these marginal costs. I mean, this does not cost a lot of money. This is not payroll like utilities, garbage collectors, or anything like that. They're not going to make that kind of money. But folks, you're going to want to be a part of this committee, because the smartest guys in governing will actually be involved in the county constitution. Those guys that are the smartest in the county in creating a good quality constitution, guess what? When it's time to reframe your state constitution, guess who's probably going to go to that? The best and the brightest out of the county. That's how it worked way back then. So if you really want, and we need people that are, one, smart and are going to be valiant guardians of liberty to make sure that these stupid ideas like communism and socialism and welfare for all is actually squashed, so that everybody understands that these constitutions at the county and the state cannot violate that U.S. Constitution. That we can't impose upon people, you know, socialism and those types of things, because the 14th Amendment won't allow us. So anyway, the second thing that the counties do is they endorse, your county legislators then take this petition, the petition you've given them, all of the petitions you give them, one at a time, they endorse the petition and they basically send it out to all of the counties in the state. And they basically tell those counties, we accept this as a legitimate request or a petition for grievances. And we are redressing these by actually following the 8 stipulations at the end of this petition. We call upon you to join us in doing the same, in one, endorsing as well as following the 8 stipulations. That gets the counties now talking together and working together. So now the burden of one county in doing all the work could actually start to be shared. And getting more
people... Yeah, so I've asked you this before, but I'll ask it again on the air. If somebody wants to give a petition to one of their commissioners, which one do you think is the best to start with?
Oh, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter because we, you know, the arguments are solid. Start with the invasion. Start with the UN. Both of those are arguments that are clearly solid. And if the commissioner says, well, why do we care about this? And then you just, you know, like the invasion. Why do we care about the invasion? Are you to tell me that you don't care whether there are invaders that have been coming into this county or not? Taking, you know, money, taking our resources, taking, you getting access to our roads and our systems and possibly even voting. You don't care about that? That's not affecting us. It's not, you know, the taxes, our housing crisis, our health crisis isn't being affected by it. The drugs coming in from that invasion, those things don't affect us. Your job is to support the Constitution per your oath. And we're giving you a petition to say we want this invasion properly handled per the Constitution. What Congress is doing is they're making a mess and a mockery. They're making a mockery of the Constitution, and they're making a mess out of this union by allowing these invaders to stay here. The Constitution demands that they be repelled. There's no other word in there. It's not mollycoddled, given access, due process, none of that. Their requirement is to repel the invaders. Do your job, federal government. And then... You know, all they have to do is petition. Because really what they're asking them to do, they have to realize that the federal government's not doing its job and the state's not holding them accountable. So the process of doing this is to first you create this committee. Send this out to every other county to do the same so that everybody understands the travesty of what's happening and where is the authority or where the lack of and so forth. This all gets flushed out in these processes. But to answer your question, any one of them, If you go down to the geoengineering, because you know people out there in Wyoming are very concerned about the chemtrails. They're very concerned about the GO2 pipeline, the CO2 pipeline, and you know these other things that are, you know, this geoengineering that they're doing. And so you can start with that. You can actually use that as the lead, but when you use that as the lead, you'll notice that it brings 9 other petitions with you. When you read it, because see, these are connected. Lots of these petitions down the road get connected. How did they get connected? Well, when the federal government assumed that they could control commerce within the states in the early 1800s, that's how it all started. So you can't go after the Department of Energy without going after the Department of Commerce. You can't go after the Department of Interior without going after the Department of Commerce, because one sin begot the other sin. So when we come back, because I know Tammy, when the music starts playing, she can't hear anything. It's just like blah, 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 and she can't even hear a word I'm saying. And so I'll repeat all of this when we come right back, and I will cut myself off here so I don't babble into the break. We'll be right back. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416. Okay, so let me go back to this point. When I say that the counties have to create this Constitutional Compliance Committee, and that they actually, the committee, or I should say, the counties don't do anything else. I mean, they create it, and then they work for them. Now, I don't think I've made that clear here. And actually, Tammy, maybe you can help me with this too. Because remember that 90-second pitch? There's no such thing as a 90-second mm-hmm. pitch to kind of say, well, this is what they do. Technically, when they create this committee, this is going to be a large committee, and it's framed after the basic fundamentals of common law. So we're doing this deliberately, because when you have a jury of 25 people or more, you basically have a grand jury. And when the county commissioners exercise their authority, or the legislators of the county exercise their authority in creating this large body of people, you're creating a super jury. But this super jury isn't determining whether a crime, you know, whether somebody's to be indicted for a crime or not. This is a discovery. They go through, because they don't know anything about it, and they're going to go through the nuts and bolts of the Constitution, and they're going to come away with a ruling that becomes finite. In other words, it's immutable. The courts can't assume authority greater than the people, because the people create constitutions. And when they go through and they look at all the facts, when the courts go, oh, well, you're not looking at our precedents, you're not looking at our case law and how we've determined, and go, well, clearly we have the founding documents, and that precedence in case law doesn't exist in these founding documents. So the fact that you're operating with case law and precedence, that's unconstitutional too, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
So we read the Tory Acts, and the Tories, these acts throughout these colonies started organizing, and they started creating these committees, these assemblies and so forth. And they looked and they deemed that what was being done were violations of their rights as Englishmen. They were petitioning for redress. So one of the things that they had to do, or they probably didn't do, that I believe we have to do. Because in England, under the monarchy as Englishmen, it is known that the king has prerogatives. The king can do whatever he needs to. So their job was to prove that there were rights that were restricting him from being able to do that. They didn't need to go through the details. But we live in a day where we actually have two constitutions. And this is why, folks, this is so important. You need the people to actually make the assertion and clarify that the federal government's living constitution, their annotated constitution, does not have authority. It is a concoction that they created without delegated authority to do so. There has to be something enumerated in the Constitution to allow them to take the language of the Constitution and redefine it and determine how they want to prosecute it. That does not exist. So, see, I know the outcomes. I know that there's only certain outcomes out of these committees. So when a committee actually comes along and says, we like the living Constitution and we want them to continue using it. No, you can't give us that judgment. You actually have to point to the actual language of where they got that authority in these ratification debates, because they're all going to be tied and they're going to be hamstrung. They can't do anything unless it comes from a ratification debate. Federalist Papers are not in play.
Right.
Okay. So when they say, well, we don't have any evidence that they could do this. Oh, okay. So then your ruling is there is no evidence for them to do that. Therefore, it's illegitimate. There's no way evil can't co-opt this unless they get you talking about feelings and ideas and ideals, and then you compromise and allow it to happen. That's how we got into this problem in the first place.
Yeah.
Okay. So once, folks, my good friend Tammy, the concept of our form of government is so divine that when followed by the living understanding of contract law, which has basically been in existence since before mankind came to earth. Covenants and contracts had always been, and commissions and so forth, to say, I want you to go forward and do this, and if you do this, I will bless you. I mean, those are contracts. And so they cannot be perverted. You can't pervert it after the fact. When the language is clear at its time, and this is the divine part of this, we know that there are tendencies after the gate where people try to redefine and do that. History is filled with those things. But the reality is what snaps everything right back to the beginning is the actual language of the compact. How was those words defined in the very beginning? Ah, if that's the case, then you must go through an amendment process. So in other words, if the federal government wants to create this annotated constitution and bend it, and create a living constitution and be able to bend it the way their rulings and those types of things happen, then they actually need to come back to the states and amend the constitution, granting them that authority. The constitution is so well defined. Only God knew what he was doing. I'm telling you, the men had no idea. The framers really had no idea. I mean, Madison, I think, was very, I mean, there's no doubt in my mind that man, had to be close to the Creator, had to be. And I think he had to be frustrated because he was constantly struggling and fighting with people to, look at this the way it was actually sold. Look at this, how they define these things, because that's the only way we can look at this. He knew that when you deviated away from that, you were walking into the arms of sin. And you know what Madison's, I believe his major from Princeton was on theology. I think he minored in governments and law. And after his I don't know when, but Princeton gave him an honorary JD because he had such a profound understanding of these things. And actually, once you learn the truths, once you learn the basic mechanics of contract law, you can't go off the highway.
I think most people, when you talk about this stuff and then reference or give an example of limited power of attorney, like, we get that. Like, all you have to do is go back to the limited power and see what
powers are there. So
yeah.
So it's the same way in the auditing process. Even though you may have evil players, there's no way they can actually create a deviation. They would actually have to try to prove to everybody that these documents that they found as the ratification debates are the real ratification debates. We have the concocted ones that are all wrong. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Now, there are lots of people, and I'm going to tell you that fake, they call them deep fakes today, right? Like Keanu Reeves has complained about deep fakes in the movies, and he actually signs he has one of the hardest contracts that he does not give them license to change his expressions, because he actually filmed a movie where he found out while he was watching the movie that a tear formed in his eye when that didn't happen. And he was very livid that they depicted him, you know, in such a way. You know, why would that bother him? Maybe, you know, I'm not that weak of a man. Whatever. It doesn't matter. And I think his point is accurate. You quit faking about me. I acted this way, and that's what you film. You can't just manipulate me into any way you want. I am a person, and I am inalienable. This goes back to the Fourth Amendment, that we are secure in our persons, effects, and things, right? I mean, they can't be doing things to make it seem like we did something else. And that's what deep fakes are about. I know that the fakes have been coming for decades. As a matter of fact, there have been really good fakes over the years regarding and how they've been doing voter fraud, because voter fraud goes all the way. I know in the 50s that they recognized voter fraud in the Lyndon B. Johnson's election as senator. I forget the town because I'm bad with names, but I do remember the circumstances. If you folks go look up runaway Lyndon, that term meant, and it pointed to this one town that turned the outcome of the event to Lyndon B. Johnson winning, because there was so close and he wasn't winning. They actually said, hey, we still have this town that hasn't turned in their records. And it was a unanimous outcome from that town. They all voted for Lyndon B. Johnson. It was the only town out of all of the voting towns, counties, areas where it was unanimous. This was like a bright spot.
Wow.
In the state of Texas, this one town was the beacon of truth that everybody voted for Lyndon B. Johnson. And by the way, folks, when the people of the town showed up to cast their vote, they happened to do it in alphabetical order. Throughout the day, because the voting was done randomly, but throughout the day, every person happened to have showed up to the polls in alphabetical order, because that's how it was registered in the voting register.
Since it's a little town called Alice.
Yeah.
In Jimwells County.
So you're looking it up and see, I don't know the names, but that's how Lyndon B. Johnson, runaway Lyndon, that's what dubbed that name. That was absolute voter fraud. You know that they didn't happen throughout the day to come in alphabetical order. So the only thing that happened was there were corrupt people running the election in that town, and whoever those names are, it should be out that these people got away with election fraud.
Yeah.
Okay. So.
Mysterious box that contained an additional 202 votes, which allowed him to win by 87 votes.
Yeah. There you go. It was that close. And in Washington State, go look up the Dino Rossi governor election, Dino Rossi and I forget, Gregoire or something like that. And they counted and counted. They went through and they actually found boxes. And so if you don't have a law in your state that says any box that has been unattended and is found in a trunk, is found in something, maybe in some closet or something, hey, we found this box. That box must be actually locked and kept after the election to determine who had their hands on it, because that box is a fraudulent box. because mm-hmm. and every person that ran the polls that day has to be brought fully accountable to how did that box even get created? Because if they all basically say, I have no idea, that's not my mark or what have you, we need to hold full accountability. And people that are involved in these things, you know, we talked about capital offenses when we were reading the first Reconstruction Act. And we're going to go into the second Reconstruction Act, hopefully soon. But the point is this, is that I believe we need to start injecting the capital offense here. When somebody believes that they want to conscript people or actually have the outcome fixed because they want their candidate over anybody else or over the will of the people, I believe that that right there either deserves stripping of your citizenship and deported or hanged. Period. Go live in another world. You'll never be an American ever again. It's kind of like being cast to hell as far as I'm concerned, because if you go live in any other country, as a matter of fact, I always get the guy's name wrong. Why is it I always have these name problems? There was a guy that was a part of the Black Panthers who went on the lam because he was accused, I think he was guilty of killing somebody and just shooting fire, what have you, or he was a part of that group. And so anyway, this gentleman was on the lam. He went to Cuba, he went to Russia, he traveled around the world, and then he ended up in the late 80s he came back to America and turned himself in. And when he turned himself in, he basically said, having lived in Russia and Cuba, I am more free in an American prison than I was walking the streets in those nations.
Wow, what?
Absolutely. And he took such a staunch turn in his life, he actually, you know, started countering the Black Panthers and these racist, you know, divisive organizations that are trying to manipulate people into, you know, doing bad things. He became a true advocate for liberty. It was one of those, wow, it's so bad you had to suffer, but now that you had this epiphany, he dedicated the rest of his life to teaching people the truth.
Wow.
I know. So, anyway, let me get back to these conditions. So, they create the committee. The second thing that they do, so they just go create a committee. There may be a little administration of the forming of the committee, but actually once they assign an administrator, because the administrator will actually do all of the forming and everything else. So then we go to the second thing. All they do is they endorse the petition and send the petition off, and they basically tell all of the county commissioners or legislators that we are supporting this. We're going to be moving forward with the rest of the steps. This is the second step in where we share this with all of you, and we basically plead to you and admonish you to endorse this as well, create your own committee, and work with this county in, you know, your committee work. And thirdly, that you actually support basically putting pressure upon the state legislature to do their job. Boom. Okay, so that's the second one. The third one is basically sending the petition now to the state legislature saying we're endorsing it and we're putting you on notice because we've got a lot of people here and this is a movement in this county and we are going to hold you accountable because you need to stop this invasion. You need to get us out of the UN. Whatever petition it is you start off with. Okay, then the fourth one is that you actually send them the Wyoming bill and you send them the South Dakota bill and say you need to pass legislation so that you create this committee and start communicating with the rest of the states like we are with the counties. So that's the fourth one. The fifth one then is the state is to promulgate. So then you'd basically direct the state, you know, that you need to promulgate to the other states these intentions and future updates and so forth. The sixth one is to begin enforcing Section 3 of the 14th Amendment so that any public servant who is failing to support the Constitution within the state at any level is to be removed immediately, and then we will, you know, review whether that person was wrongfully removed or not in a common law court. If they actually did violate the Constitution, there is no reseating. But they can challenge that, you know, until that person has actually taken their place. Because it usually takes about a month or two to refill the seats for somebody. So that gives that person who's been challenged, that's been removed, they have a chance to challenge in a common law grand jury to determine whether they actually did violate it based on the facts in the petition. Now, the removal of a person needs to come in a First Amendment petition where the constitutional case is stated. And if those are the facts, it's done. I mean, that's why you look at it and go, well, this is a good presented case. You did vote on that. There's your record. That was an unconstitutional measure you've supported. So you actually violated the Constitution. Sorry, you're down. Now, you can go appeal this to a common law grand jury, but good luck with that. Anyway, so the seventh one is to create and pass a law making it easier for we the people to remove public servants from office using Section 3. So that we can initiate them via the petitions quicker, so that we don't have to go to the county. We can hop over from one county to another. We can invoke our authority as U.S. citizens to basically petition anywhere to do that, because we may find that there are certain counties that are okay with their constitution violators. See my point? So we want to be able to do, we want to be able to do that and overstep those bounds. Eighth, and the final point, that all government agencies provide full transparency and documentation for the public regarding all of the things that they're doing as far as the audit, as far as all of this stuff that comes out into a full record. We want to be able to give to our posterity the truth of what happened and how it happened and who did it, so that they know never to repeat this problem of letting public servants use political theatrics and compromise to sell you downriver. Boom. So, I mean, those are reasonable, but if you really look at it, they're not doing hardly anything. It doesn't keep them from doing their job.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I mean, it requires some attention. It requires some follow-up. But that doesn't take them from doing their job. I mean, they still eat that day. That takes them away from doing their job. Anyway. All right. So let's dive into the second Reconstruction Act. And then tomorrow we'll just go straight into this, because I think that this little deviation on these very specific points are very important. And we'll get back into it once you've finally given me or ready to give me some feedback on them. But anyway. All right, so folks, this is March 23, 1867. The 14th Amendment still has not been ratified. So they're out there actually creating these acts based upon the, you know, the Constitution still. Okay, so go ahead.
An act supplementary to an act entitled An Act to Provide for the More Efficient Government of the Rebel States, passed March 2nd, 1867, and to facilitate restoration, be it enacted by the Senate and the House of Representatives of the United States of America in Congress assembled.
Hold it. I want to go back to this, because we said this before. What are these states? Are these states just these, you know, little nomad countries, or are these states, has the United States government assumed them as territories? What are they?
It says states.
Well, so the rebel states, yes, but they're technically territories, right?
Right.
Okay, so they haven't come back into as states in the Union. They're still labeling them as rebel states, and they're managing them as territories, which is why they are creating, because Article 4, Section 3 clearly gives Congress the power to make needful rules and regulations respecting the territories.
Right.
They don't get their sovereignty back until they're admitted back into the Union. This is a hard, you know, I run into people and they say, hey, well, they didn't leave the Union. Actually, they did leave the Union. And they go, no, they didn't. I go, okay, show me who was the representative when Lincoln reformed the Constitution, or I should say Congress, to do the 13th Amendment. And when, you know, the war ended, who was allowed back into Congress? Because when you seceded, we had four secession states. The problem was Lincoln became the tyrant and didn't allow the other states to send secession states to Congress because he closed Congress. So I think the other states just said, we're out. You know, they didn't even worry about the formality. There were four states that actually wrote the formality when Lincoln had his meltdown and he became an unconstitutional tyrant. So anything and everything else beyond that, you know, didn't matter what he was reading, doesn't matter what he was saying or writing. He was an unconstitutional tyrant. And the only thing I care about is what he did constitutionally.
Mm-hmm.
If you, when he declared martial law, did he have the constitutional authority to declare martial law? No. Because he wasn't using the militia. I mean, I could go through every reason why everything he was doing was literally in desperation and all as a tyrant. Period. Those are the facts. When you look at the Constitution, did he ever have the authority to do all the things? They just arrest people and throw them into jail permanently without writ of habeas corpus? No. People died in those jails. He was a tyrant. Okay, so anyway, back to the act. Go ahead.
But before the first day of September 1867, the commanding general in each district defined by an act entitled An Act to Provide for the More Efficient Government of the Rebel States, passed March 2nd, 1867, shall cause a registration to be made of the male citizens of the United States, 21 years of age and upwards, resident in each county or parish in the state or states included in his district, which registration shall include only those persons who are qualified to vote for delegates by the act aforesaid, and who shall have taken and subscribed the following oath or affirmation. I, comma, me, do solemnly swear or affirm in the presence of Almighty God that I am a citizen of the United States of...
I'm a citizen of the state of Alabama. That I have resided in said state for how many years? Right, okay. Keep going.
Mm-hmm. That I've resided in said state for however many years, months, next, preceding this day, and now reside in the county of blank or the parish of blank in said state, as the case may be, that I am 21 years old, that I have not been disfranchised for participation in any rebellion or civil war against the United States, nor for felony committed against the laws of any state or of the United States, that I have never been a member of any state legislature, nor held any executive or judicial office in any state, and afterwards engaged in insurrection or rebellion against the United States, or given aid or comfort to the enemies thereof.
Okay, we gotta go. All right, so unfortunately, folks, and sorry, Tammy, we'll have to cover this again. And unfortunately, because this is the oath. I thought we could get all the way through this oath, and we only got halfway through it. And so what they're doing in the South is they're actually having everybody attest that they weren't a part of the rebellion and so forth. So this is all important stuff. This is all ultra, ultra critical. So we'll pick it back up tomorrow. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.